The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to the Feminist Book Club podcast, a show for dangerous, well-read women. Each week, we explore literature and media through a feminist lens as one small way to reclaim our time, our books, and our stories. Let's get started. Hey everyone, Renee Powers here, and I am the founder of Feminist Book Club. Welcome back, and happy Black History Month. We have such a treat for you today. Rachel Ricketts is the author of Do Better, Spiritual Activism for Fighting and Healing from White Supremacy. And y'all, she's just generally a BFD, a big fucking deal. So do yourself a favor and follow her on social media right now and then go order her book. What I love most about her approach is that spirituality for Rachel is dependent upon and intimately intertwined with social justice. You can't have one without the other. This resonated so deeply with me. I was raised Catholic, but like liberal Catholic with a strong foundation in social justice. So this approach felt really familiar to me as I read it. But we touch upon a number of important topics like the January 6th insurrection and how it wasn't surprising to people who were paying attention, how dismantling white supremacy is a key component to spiritual activism, and grief work as it relates to race and trauma that all races experience, and that means, yes, including white folks. This conversation is so, so good, so take some time to give it your full attention and just like bookmark it to come back to again and again. You will not be disappointed. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm chatting with Rachel Ricketts. Rachel is a queer, multiracial Black woman. As a global thought leader, racial justice educator, healer, speaker, and writer, she hosts intersectional racial justice workshops worldwide, including her renowned spiritual activism series. Rachel cultivates change by fusing her experiences as an attorney, trained anti-racism educator, and grief coach with her spiritual certifications in breathwork, yoga, mindfulness, and Reiki. She has helped numerous global brands with anti-racism efforts, including Google, WeWork, and Lululemon. Rachel was named one of the Well and Good's 2020 Changemakers and has been featured in international media such as New York Times, Cosmopolitan, Goop, and The Atlantic. And she's a woman after my heart. She loves donuts, dancing, disruptions, and all things metaphysical, ideally all at once, samesies. Today, we are talking about her brand new book, Do Better, Spiritual Activism for Fighting and Healing from White Supremacy. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me.
So our first question for all of our guests is, what does it mean to you to be feminist?
Yeah, I think for me, I don't identify with the word feminism personally. So I roll with womanist. And I think for some folks, when they say feminist, that can be true for them. I think I love that you asked that question because it really has such different meanings for different people. But that's specifically why I think womanist is important. So for me, womanist meaning feminism that's rooted in Black liberation and prioritizing the care, comfort, and well-being of Black women. Because when we do that, then we're prioritizing the care, comfort, and well-being of the collective as a whole. When Black women can be free and liberated, then all women will be free and liberated.
Yes. And correct me if I'm wrong, womanist is a term coined by bell hooks, correct?
Alice Walker.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I want to give credit where credit is due there.
Absolutely.
And I think that is a really important perspective to take when we're having conversations about feminism and social justice and racial justice in particular. So I appreciate that approach. How does then that definition of womanism inform your work?
Yeah, it is really central, absolutely central to all the work that I do. All the work that I do is specifically for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, carte blanche, but very specifically for Black women and femmes. And so, yeah, it's absolutely central to all of the work that I do to prioritize our comfort, our care and our well-being, like I say, because in the justice work that I'm doing, when we do that, and this has been said for centuries, if not decades, when we prioritize those who have been made most marginalized, then we're creating freedom and egalitarian society for all.
Yes. So what is spiritual activism? That is the title of your most popular series. It is the subtitle of your book. What is spiritual activism and what does it have to do with white supremacy in particular, but all forms of oppression?
Ooh, yeah, thank you. So I define it as spiritual activism as the daily, active, ongoing, anti-oppressive thought, speech, and actions that are informed by a connection with spiritual power. It can be secular or non-secular. I don't belong to an organized faith. It's secular for me. It begins with deep inner work, which I find is most supported by culturally informed and culturally appreciative spiritual practices. So that includes meditation, breath work, energy work. The eight limbs of yoga really can be a variety of what works best for folks. And for me, to be a spiritual person is to have an understanding of the interconnectedness of all beings. And that is really central to me in the activism that we're doing. If we are out trying to create change and dismantle systems of oppression without having an understanding of the ways in which we are all interconnected and the ways in which we all cause each other harm and are harmed by one another, then we can be out in the world actually causing more harm in the activism that we're doing, and or be doing activism in a way that we don't think includes us, meaning we don't think that we are the ones who are perpetrating harm, or we don't think that it impacts us in any way, negatively or positively, none of which is true. And then for folks who are spiritual people, I don't think if you are a spiritual person and you understand that interconnectedness of all beings, however that may manifest for you, then you understand that my oppression is your oppression. And of course, it looks and feels different depending on like the power and privilege that you have, but we are all interconnected. And so to be a spiritual person for me means you have to be active. You have to be an activist. You have to be out there trying to dismantle the systems of oppression that are keeping some of us stuck. Because when some of us are stuck, all of us are stuck. And the goal here is collective liberation and healing for all.
On the other hand, what is spiritual bypassing? Can you dig into that a little bit? Because yeah, we see that rampant on white lady yoga media.
Yeah.
So how does that manifest itself in social justice work or unwork?
Yeah, it's rampant out in these streets, as I like to say, which is why I think spiritual bypassing is like really how I got into spiritual activism. I was raised in a very white, wealthy space. It's the headquarters of Lululemon. It's a space where people consider themselves to be quite spiritual and active and are generally neither. So spiritual bypassing is using spiritual ideas and practices to sidestep or avoid facing challenging issues, emotions, conflict, anything quote unquote low vibe. It's like love and light supremacy. It's this notion that we're all one race, the human race, which again, as a spiritual person, I believe that we're all interconnected beings for sure, but we're in different skin sacks and we're not having the same experience and we are not oppressed the same. And some of us are oppressing others and some of us have more power and privilege than others. That results in more dire consequences as a result of the oppression. So it also results in just an invalidation of the most marginalized, right? Like it's when I come to someone and say, this is the experience I had of oppression, and you're met with, you know, well, that's not what they meant, or you're just like, I'm sorry you took it that way, or that's just super low vibe. It's a form of gaslighting. It's a form of emotional violence as well, as I outline in the book. There's many forms, and for me, spiritual bypassing is absolutely one of them. And for me, it's really more about the person who is attempting to bypass, right, than it is anything that's being brought to that person. It's your inability to face your own shadow. It's your inability to tolerate your own discomfort. Because if you could tolerate your own discomfort, you wouldn't feel the need to create this defense to bypass or live in some like total fucking alternate universe where everything is positive. That's not being human. That's not real. Like, look at the times we're living in. No way.
We will get to those times. But one of the things that you brought up that I thought was so fascinating and I hadn't seen anywhere else is the way that racial justice work is grief work as well. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think you're touching on it a little bit here. And yeah. I'd love to have our audience kind of be introduced to that perspective.
Sure. Yeah. I believe that all justice work is grief work and trauma work for everyone involved. Whether you are someone who has been made oppressed or someone who is an oppressor, both of those positions result in harm and trauma. Of course, they're very different and have very different consequences depending on the position or identity that you possess. But for example, to be a dominator, to belong to a dominant group and perpetually cause harm, create, cultivate, and foster systems of oppression against other people requires you to disconnect from your heart space. You know, white supremacy requires white people to disconnect from themselves. It's actually why white people have such a hard fucking time understanding what white supremacy is and that they're all implicated in it, because they've been disconnected, as have your ancestors and your ancestors' ancestors for centuries. So that is trauma that y'all need to work on. And that's exactly what this book really is about. Like, until white people do their trauma work and their healing work, white supremacy won't change and systems of white supremacy cannot be dismantled. So it's grief work across the board. And it's not just, to me, white supremacy encompasses all forms of oppression. So it's transphobia and homophobia and ableism and classism and capitalism and colorism and fatphobia. Like, all of those things are rooted in white supremacy. So when I'm talking about racial justice and white supremacy, I'm talking about an intersectional form of anti-oppression, period. So when I talk about specifically white people, I'm talking about dominant groups and white supremacy. But of course, there's a million other dominant groups. Like, I'm thin, non-disabled, light-skinned, highly educated, financially secure, et cetera, et cetera. So I hold power and privilege as well. And as a result, I belong to dominant groups and cause harm to those groups who have been made marginalized. That causes me grief, whether I'm aware of it or not. And that's work, inner healing work for me to do, to realize the ways that I cause harm, to process that, which is incredibly hard work to do, and then make sure that I mitigate that harm moving forward. And then of course, it causes great grief to the people who have been made most marginalized, to the Black folks, the trans folks, the queer folks, the disabled folks, the fat folks, the poor folks, without question, because these are systems of oppression that result in systematic harm and have been in place for centuries. You know, MLK Jr. Day was recently, and for me anyway, it was the first year I saw colored photos, all of these images of MLK Jr. in color, because we've seen them to date in black and white, because status quo would like us to believe that that was a long time ago. It was not. It was not. My mother was 10, 12. My grandmother, you know, my parents and grandparents were alive through that. It was in color. It was not long ago. So it's potent. It's real. And it's been going on for way too fucking long. So it's also inherited grief. It's grief that we experience in our lived daily lives. And all of us are in grief in these streets. I mean, global pandemic, Black uprising, white supremacist terrorists taking over the Capitol. Lord knows what's going to happen at inauguration, et cetera, et cetera. These are tough times. And so if we can't acknowledge that grief is rampant and what that does to us and how it diminishes our capacity to actually care for ourselves and then show up for others, again, we'll never achieve justice. It's not going to be possible. The work has to be done from the inside out.
Let's touch a little bit on what happened January 6th and the insurrection in Washington, D.C. From your perspective as a racial justice activist facilitator, what happened and what did you see, and how did that just reinforce all of the work that needs to be done?
Yeah. I'm just thinking about this meme that I saw that was like, Black people watching the insurrection, and it's Oprah putting her hands up like, that really sums it up a lot for me. It's like Black people, Black indigenous and people of color, but specifically I'll talk about Black people in this moment, because the contrast of that terrorist coup attempt, was specifically what happens when Black Lives Matters uprisers even come near the Capitol. That contrast really needs to be discussed. And I talk about this in my book, but like, the opposite of white supremacy is Blackness. You know what I mean? Like whiteness doesn't exist without Blackness. Those are the opposites. So it wasn't surprising. There's nothing surprising about white supremacy. And folks who are surprised, I mean, again, in color, wasn't that long ago when white folks were hanging Black people from trees and bringing your children to watch that and pack a picnic? Like, there are no words.
Yeah.
There's truly no words. It was not that long ago. So I, when white folks are shocked about white supremacy, again, to me, it is just indicative of the fact that y'all have so much work to do to have an understanding of really what white supremacy is, how rampant it is, how violent it is, how you're all implicated. And that doesn't mean you're wrong or evil, but it means you're implicated. You have work to do to ensure that these systems are dismantled, because until the systems are dismantled, you're always going to have harm and violence. And for me, I felt one of two ways at the same time. One, deeply traumatized to witness, mostly because of the response. And by response, I mean lack of response. Like, to witness cops do nothing, not only, well, not all, there was a Black cop who was like a fucking hero, but to witness the majority of cops who did nothing and not only do nothing, take selfies with these people and open gates. I've seen videos of them opening gates for these people, in direct contrast to Black people coming anywhere near Capitol buildings. Or, and I'm forgetting her name in this moment, unfortunately, but there was a Black woman who drove down the wrong street accidentally with her child in the back of the car and was shot dead for driving down the wrong, because she's Black and she was in the wrong space at the wrong time. No one even talks about it. I don't even in this moment know her name. Like, how fucked is that? So to witness the contrast of, like, absolutely knowing without a shadow of a doubt that had those people been Black, they would have been shot dead. Like, that never would have happened. And that the police response is like, let's protect the people who are in here, as opposed to doing what cops are known to do in response to Black bodies, which is literally just shoot us dead. That's deeply traumatizing. And then in the same vein, it's like, well, white people need to see this shit, because y'all think this went away when you elected Biden. And that's fucked up. That's, again, a result of your white supremacy, to think that no matter who's in power, it didn't matter when Obama was in power. And I'm not saying that Obama being in power is not greatly better than Trump. That's not what I'm saying. But to think that one elected leader is going to change systems of white supremacy, or somehow let you off the hook of the work that needs to be done by every single individual person to create critical collective change, is a function of white supremacy. So it was deeply traumatizing. It was also like, yep. And yeah, I just think there's nothing that's shocking about it. I think more is to come also. And I've been saying this for a really long time. I mean, I was shocked that Trump didn't get reelected. I straight up was like fully ready for him to be reelected, and called, I say it in the book that was printed before the election, I called that more white women would vote for him in this election than in 2016. And that was an easy call, because I understand whiteness better than white people will ever begin to understand it, because you haven't had to face it. It hasn't oppressed you. You haven't been living under its foot your entire life.
Yeah. And that's the double bind, right? That you have to be able to understand it in order to participate in it, in order yes. to exist within it.
Yeah. And we all exist within it, and we can all perpetuate it. And we all do. We all perpetuate systems of oppression, even when we're trying not to. The goal is not perfection. To me, that's a symptom of white supremacy. It's how can we do our best to rectify the harms that we have caused and mitigate that harm moving forward, so that we can create new systems. I believe it's totally possible. I believe we absolutely have an opportunity to do that now in a way we haven't before. We've had many opportunities though, just to be clear. But I do have hold hope that we can make that change. But again, it won't happen unless we are implicating ourselves and understanding the work that we individually need to do in order to create a collective movement that results that inner shift.
You also mention in the book the oppressed oppressor, particularly when you're talking about white women and white women plus. What is that? And why do we, as white women and the white women listening to this, why do we need to acknowledge that? And what can we do with that information once we acknowledge it?
So I believe that we all, or, you know, most at least, are oppressed oppressors, meaning at some point on the spectrum of power and privilege, we have some power and privilege, and in some instances, and then we face oppression in other. You know, certainly there are folks who live in an identity where they may just be like carte blanche, totally in oppressed positions. But I'd say for the most part, most of us can identify as an oppressed oppressor. Like I said earlier, I hold power and privilege in certain instances, being thin, light-skinned, financially secure, non-disabled, cis, in a hetero-passing relationship, etc. But I'm also Black, woman-identified, queer, etc., etc. So for me, it's having an understanding of like, where on the spectrum am I? What harms am I subjected to? And who am I causing harm and how? I talk about this specifically in terms of white women, though, because it's one of the places y'all get the most stuck. because there's this focus on patriarchy or heteropatriarchy and the ways that it oppresses you. And it absolutely does. And that, to me, again, that's a part of white supremacy and that needs to be stopped. But that's kind of where that like conversation of oppression ends. There's a lack of fulsome understanding of like, yes, I am oppressed by heteropatriarchy and I oppress Black, Indigenous and people of color because of white supremacy. But I belong to a dominant group and have power and privilege because of my racial privilege. And I am oppressed because I am a woman or femme or just any non-male or masculine gender identity that is oppressed by heteropatriarchy. There's this hyper focus on patriarchy and the ways in which you are oppressed by that without, again, this other piece of like, and I oppress others because of these. And then again, if you hold other positions of power, then you oppress others in that way. And or you are a white woman who is poor or disabled or fat. And so you are oppressed in multiple ways for sure. That none of that, your like ethnicity, none of that takes away from the fact that you have racial power and cause harm as a result of perpetuating white supremacy. So it's a really tricky one for white women to really sit with. And I go into this in the book, but there's a, like really identifiable obstacles that I witness a lot, like the need to be good and right that really stops all folks again, but usually white women the most from being able to sit with the fulsome and like emotions that arise when you sit with this. Cause it's like, oh shit, I've caused harm. Like, you know, to take that on. And part of that response and defense is again, an offshoot of white supremacy because one, you haven't had to face the reality of the world in the same way because systems of oppression have allowed, systems of white supremacy, I should say, which is a system of oppression, but systems of white supremacy have allowed you to be buffered from having to sit with the truth in many ways of how you have caused harm. And also the white supremacist heteropatriarchal ideal of femininity is whiteness. It's Eurocentric and it's quiet, it's meek, it's good, it's right, it's pure, it's innocent. And you subconsciously and consciously want to ascribe to that. And so this is saying, no, the identity that you think that you possess is actually incorrect. You will have to relearn what you knew about the world and about yourself. And that's really fucking hard. That takes a lot of deep inner work. That's shadow work. That's mirror work. That's inner child work. That's trauma work. That's grief work. It's really hard. And, you know, white women really understand this when I talk about it in terms of patriarchy, like patriarchy, this massive pervasive system of oppression. All men perpetuate it, whether they are aware of it or not, intend to or not. And it exists in rooms with or without men. It's a system, right? So in a group, a room of all women, patriarchy, heteropatriarchy is alive and well. And white supremacy is the same. All white people, including white women, belong to it and perpetuate it, whether they intend to or not. And I always say, fuck your intentions, FYI, I don't care. I go into that in the book. Whether you intend to or not, whether you're conscious of it or not, and it exists in rooms with or without men, with or without white people. So groups of Black, Indigenous, and people of color absolutely perpetuating white supremacy also because it's the status quo. It's what we all know. We all know these systems of oppression and operate within them. And the invitation here is to do the deep inner work required to be able to observe it, acknowledge it, and start to shift it from the inside out so that those systems can stop existing and we can stop perpetuating them and the harm that they cause, not only those who have been made most marginalized, but like I said at the top, ourselves, even as people who belong to dominant groups, we cause harm to ourselves as well.
I can hear white women, especially
yeah.
in my ear, saying, well, but I'm an ally.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I was glad to see that you make a very strong point in the book that you can't call yourself an ally. It's not how this works. But the social justice movements are rampant with performative activism. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, MLK Day is just, I call MLK Jr. Day the original black square of social media, which is all performative activism. So you cannot be an ally, irrespective to any group made most marginalized, not just white folks, right? But it, like you mentioned, it generally comes up in the terms of white supremacy and white women like to be the first to label themselves an ally. And here's the thing for me, you cannot be an ally because you will never, it's a choice you make every breath, every second of every day. It's a choice, just in the same way it's a choice to acting in allyship is a choice, just as it's a choice not to act in allyship, which is also part of why people are perpetuating white supremacy all day, whether they're aware of it or not. Everything we do or don't do is choices and has consequences and impacts and means that we are all part of these systems, whether we want to be or intend to be or not. You cannot be an ally. You can act in allyship. I am Black. I cannot take my Blackness off. It does not go away. And like Blackness is a social construct just like whiteness is, right? But the consequences are very real. But you, as an quote unquote ally, get to choose in every moment, in every second of every day. And you will not always choose correctly. You will not. You will fuck it up. This is one of the biggest pieces that I drive home in the book. Like the point here is not perfection. That is not an ideal that we can strive to, nor should we. And it stops a lot of people, specifically white women and femmes, from trying at all. Because again, there's this deep fear of getting it wrong. There's this deep fear of your own emotions. There's this deep fear of like misaligning with the identity that you believe you have about yourselves, being pure and innocent and good and all that shit. So get over it. Also, the I'm an ally piece is just an offshoot of I'm good and right. Mm. It's about you. It's white centering. You can never label yourself anything. Anything. Only folks who have been made marginalized by the group that you are oppressing can. And like, just overarchingly, why do you even care what a label is? Just do the work. Who cares? I'm not out in these streets like, I'm an ally for the non-disabled. I'm an ally for the poor. I'm an ally for trans folk. I don't have time. I am just doing the work to dismantle the systems that are causing them harm. Like, and to call myself an ally is just totally pandering to my dominance, which actually means you're not doing the fucking work at all.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. So we're coming to the end of our time, which is bananas to me. But early on in this book, you explain that this book is written to white women for Black, Indigenous, and women plus of color. Why is that distinction important to you?
Yeah, it was really nuanced when I say this in the book. I did not want to write a book to white women. I really didn't, because status quo is whiteness. Most books are written to white folks. That's just the white gaze, regardless of your race, because everything's made for whiteness in a white supremacist world that we all live in. So I was like, do I really want to cater like to that and write a book to white folks? But when I really sat with what the work is and who needs this work the most in order to actually create liberation for those who have been made most marginalized, and I'm prioritizing Black and Indigenous women, femmes, femme-passing folks, gender non-conforming, non-binary, trans folks. I had to write it to white folks. I had to. And I specifically had to write it to women. No one has caused me more personal, professional grief or racial harm or violence than white women. Not white men, white women. And it's, again, loaded in this oppressed oppressorship, which Black men are also like a close second to women on. And that's partially because y'all are just one step down from white maleship, right? And so you're so close. And so you're more willing to align yourselves. White women are more willing to align themselves with whiteness, and Black men are more willing to align themselves with patriarchy, because it's the one step closer to being having the most power and privilege of white masculinity. So I had to write it to white women because y'all are out in these streets being really violent and causing a lot of harm, and letting yourselves off the hook again, because being like, well, it's white men who are the problem. No, no. All of those men who stormed the Capitol have sisters and aunties and were raised, generally speaking, by women or femmes in some way, shape, or form, right?
Yeah. Some of them brought their moms, I saw.
Probably. Mm-hmm. And that's important. Also, like when we go through the history of white supremacy and like racial harm, and you see like white men in the woods with their cloaks or whatever, like there are women too. There's photos of it. There are absolutely women KKK, like directors very high up. I mean, also, I would like to say, as women and femmes, we know we run shit in a lot of ways. Like, we are subjected to patriarchy and absolutely have obstacles in our way. And we know the power that we possess when we come together and put our minds towards something. So it's really important for women to have white women to have an understanding of the ways in which they're perpetuating these systems of harm. Also, I talk about emotional violence a lot. And like I said, it's this insidious form of violence, not always racial, but for white women, like this insidious form of racial violence and harm that, because I don't walk away from those experiences with a Black eye, I can't be like, see? So it makes it worse. It actually makes it or can make it a lot worse, because then you, the victim is just subjected to thinking that they brought that on themselves, or being gaslit into thinking that what just happened didn't actually happen. So had to write it to white women because white women have the most internal work to do. And it's for Black, Indigenous, and women of color, specifically queer and trans Black women and femmes, because it's about our freedom and our collective liberation. And we can't be free as humans on this planet. We can't dismantle these toxic systems of oppression until the folks who have the most power and privilege are doing their work to dismantle those systems. And that requires individual inner work to create critical collective change. If we're not doing the inner work and we're out in these streets trying to create collective change, we're probably perpetuating more systems of harm, again, unintentionally, but it doesn't matter. So we need to be able to be fully involved. We need to be able to really have this work resonate from the inside out. I think that's why we haven't gotten where we need to be yet, because we are approaching this from an analytical, masculine way, which is, again, just the status quo. That's like white supremacist, heteropatriarchy, capitalist, with this rationality, this textbook analysis of things. And I don't think that that's going to get us where we need to be. I think that can be an important piece of it for sure. But I think the most important education that we all need to be doing right now is this inner work. It's healing work. It's trauma work. It's grief work. So that's what the book helps provide. The do better is doing better from the inside out. Everyone get something from it, no matter where you are in your journey, no matter your race or ethnicity. But I will say specifically, it's for Black, Indigenous, and people of color and our healing, because we also have work to do in the racial justice journey. We have to unplug from the systems of white supremacy and start to prioritize ourselves instead of whiteness and white comfort, which is incredibly challenging in the systems that we live in. And it's incredibly healing for white folks, because it's an opportunity to dive within and really understand the ways in which you have caused harm, and feel empowered to acknowledge that and mitigate that harm moving forward. And that results in the sense of inner peace and an ability to connect not only with yourself, but with others in such a meaningful way. It supports you with boundary making. I mean, justice work, I believe when you're doing authentic anti-racism and racial justice, which is fulsome anti-oppression in this way, in this embodied, heart-centered way, it changes your entire life. Your entire life changes. It's not easy, that's for sure, but I do think that it's for the better. That's the response that I hear a lot. This work changed my entire life for the better. And that's my hope. My hope is for collective healing for all, prioritizing those who have been made most marginalized and need the most healing in this moment. It's my long-winded answer to your question.
I love it. I love that long-winded answer. I also want to hammer home a point that you make in the book, that white folks are not the ones to be leading this healing. We have to follow the lead of especially queer Black women to make these changes.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to echo that so our audience can hear that too. So this has been incredible. Thank you so much for everything, for writing this book, for spending your time with me today. We wrap up with two simple questions. And that's, the first is, do you have a book that's not your own that you would recommend our audience check out?
Yes, I have so many. I'm going to go with Yagiyasi's Homegoing, which is one of my favorites. And of course, her latest one, Transcendent Kingdom, which is amazing. But if you haven't read Homegoing, start with Homegoing. It's just, it's one of my best favorite books ever.
Yeah. Great recommendation. And our last one is, if we want to follow your work and stay connected with you online, where is the best place to do that?
Cool. So my website is www.rachelricketts.com. My Instagram, which is where I am most of the time, whether I like it or not, is at I am Rachel Ricketts. And all the info for purchasing my book, you can find on both of those places, and my spiritual activism webinars and book events and all of that good stuff is all on there. I also have a mailing list. So if you head to my website, you can sign up for the mailing list and you get like soul care offerings every month. And we do reparations roundups to support Black and Indigenous liberation as well.
Love it. Thank you so much. We will put links to all of that in the show notes, including your book, how to pre-order it, the recommendation of Homegoing, and where to find you online. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. As always, a rating and review in the podcast app of your choice goes a long way in supporting feminist media. We'd love to have you join the Feminist Book Club subscription box, a community-driven subscription box which features a book of the month and products from women and queer-owned businesses delivered directly to your doorstep. This is an easy way to vote with your dollars, as you'll be supporting this podcast, small women and queer-owned businesses, and the charity beneficiary of the month, which receives 5% of total sales. Use code PODCAST for a discount on any subscription package. Learn more about the box and get the show notes for today's episode at feministbookclub.com. See you next time.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.